Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me once again from this palatial VoIP line in the middle of the internet is Brandon Shockney. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, Bill. I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
That's pretty good to hear. I would say I'm doing pretty good as well.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Peach,
pretty good.
If you will.
Peach. Pretty good.
Yeah. So, Brandon, you know, what we like to do around here is talk about video games.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. They're these things, you put them in a VCR and then you can like kind of imagine another world and like run around in it. And sometimes like skateboarders will attack you.
Whoa.
Or
are those the things that go beep boop?
Yes. They, okay. They do that from time to time. There are arrows. There's joysticks.
Ooh.
If you want to make jokes about yanking on joysticks, that's appropriate. You can do that.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, you're going to like these things.
I think so.
You know, we have a question we always ask around here. We have our friendly guests on. Hey, Brandon.
Uh-huh.
What you playing?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Bill. I forget if I have a few things I've been playing. I forget if I've talked about one of them already. Did I talk about Resident Evil 3 last time I was on the podcast, or had I not beaten that yet?
I don't believe we've talked about it.
Yes. So, as you know, I was a huge fan of Resident Evil 2 when I finally got around to it and beat that. And I immediately went into Resident Evil 3, which was, again, a great experience. I think it's hard to reach the heights of Resident Evil 2. And I think Resident Evil 3 has a few things holding it back from that level of greatness, most notably being just the game length. It's not a very long game. It is consistently interesting and fun throughout. Like they kept like introducing new things and new surprises. But you know, the Resident Evil 2 having that built-in two perspective, you know, two characters that offer different perspectives on the events, allowing you to do two playthroughs to get the full story, really allows some replayability. And while there is some replayability here with Resident Evil 3, it's just, you know, once you're done with it, you're done with that story. There's nothing else in that realm to really discover again. So I think I will replay it here at some point, but, you know, I'm not necessarily ready to dive right back into it.
That's entirely fair. Yeah. I found it to be a good game, mm-hmm. but how did you feel about Nemesis?
I thought I was actually after Resident Evil 2, I was where I was traumatized from my run-ins with Mr. X. I was thinking like, oh, great. So Resident Evil 3 just has that times 11, right, in Nemesis. But I actually found Nemesis, while being like a cool enemy presence, I didn't find him particularly scary, and I never found myself in any real sort of danger with him. Like it all felt, all of his encounters feel a lot more like big set pieces, right? They're a little more contrived in terms of, you know, they're boss, all mini bosses basically. Whereas, Mr. X being kind of this presence that follows you around is very unnerving and you can't beat him. So I liked the look of Nemesis. I liked the constant like evolution of Nemesis, but in terms of like a threat that like puts me on edge, he didn't have that effect on me that I was kind of hoping he would.
Yeah, there are definitely some distinctions from Mr. X that kind of hurt Nemesis. Like I've played through RE3 as well. I think the fact that there's not a single like spot where you spend most of the game, like the police station in 2, right, that hurts with the Mr. X comparisons. And then here it feels like, you know, a lot of times there's a big cutscene that brings you into a Nemesis encounter, and then you just like only dealing with Nemesis at that point. You're not like trying to advance the story otherwise. You're not trying to dodge other zombies.
Right.
You're just like shooting Nemesis like 800 times with acid rounds or shotgun shells or whatever.
Yeah, they're like orchestrated boss fights as opposed to like this hindrance to keep you from your actual mission, right? Which ratchets up all the like intensity of the situation in Resident Evil 2. I wish we had spent more time in the opening area of Resident Evil 3 in that little like the shopping center, you know, kind of going into those various buildings. I really did like exploring that area, and that's the place that gave me, I guess, the most Resident Evil 2 vibes, just kind of going in and out through there and backtracking. But yeah, once you were done with like one particular set of tasks, then you were moving on to the next thing and you kind of never look back. So I kind of like the distinction in that it's a little more action oriented as opposed to horror oriented. I like that it has just like one removed from Resident Evil 2 in terms of like tone, right? It's just a little bit sillier. It's a little bit punchier. I liked that as like a separation between the two, which I think make it a good combo. But man, it's I think I was just spoiled with Resident Evil 2, right? Everything else kind of feels like a step down. So that being said, I now just want more games that are like this, that utilize this engine, that utilize this type of exploration, that with like the map system and everything that I think is just so well done, makes backtracking and exploration not a pain in the ass, but like a fun feature to like know which rooms still need things to be explored and whatnot. I really want more of that. While I am excited for what Resident Evil 8 will be bringing to the table, I definitely prefer what they've been doing with like the 2 and 3 remakes.
You should check out Evil Within 2, I think. It's a, you know, normally dirt cheap. I bet you could find a copy on like Amazon for, you know, $15. Mm-hmm. And it has some of that same energy where it's a little different because rather than, you know, being in a police station, you're kind of in an open world. Like you're in this little neighborhood for reasons doing stuff. And in there, like there, you can like go into houses and such, but you know, it's not quite the same. And overall, I would say it's a solid game, but not like at the level of RE2. But if you're looking for something similar to that experience, you might find it there.
That's a good recommendation. I think I will check that out because I find even with some of the things I'm playing currently, I find that I'm still longing for that Resident Evil vibe because I did really enjoy my time with that. But the other game that I just completed that I was very excited to talk about today is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D. So I, as you know, I recently obtained a new Nintendo 3DS, and I was able to finally dive into Majora's Mask, which is a game that I have never completed, but have always wanted to complete. And man, I just had such a good time with this game. I think I have Ocarina of Time on deck next. I have played both games, but I decided to work backwards for this because I was more interested in playing through the Majora's Mask storyline. And man, I think next to Breath of the Wild, this might be my favorite Zelda game. I really like all the mechanics. I like the traveling back and forth through time, having the 3-day time constraint, utilizing a variety of masks for different tasks, you know, learning about the different townspeople and, you know, meeting their over the course of the 3 days, like figuring out their patterns and what you need to do. I will, full disclosure, I did use like a guide for a lot of it so that I could get through. I wanted to get all the masks and everything.
For some of that stuff, you gotta, yeah. Like especially the one about the young couple.
Yes. Oh, man. Wow. Yeah. That where you have to do stuff over the course of, 3 days. That was insane. But very rewarding to like go through all that. Right. And I think the improvements that the 3DS game made really helped that, too. There's a lot more you can do in terms of moving forward through time. You can go to like specific hours as opposed to just like dawn of the next day or the night of the next day. You can kind of choose specific times, so it makes it easier to pinpoint certain things you need to do. But yeah, I just had such a blast with it. I really like I think Skull Kid wearing the Majora's Mask is one of my favorite like designs for any video game character. I think he looks so cool, and I as soon as I finished it, I was like, oh, I think I need a Zelda break now. But now I'm like itching to start up Ocarina of Time right away because I'm just ready for more of that era of Zelda.
Was this your first time playing through Majora's Mask?
I had played it a little bit back in the N64 days. I forget if I owned it or if I borrowed it from a friend for a little while. But I never finished it. I think because at the time it felt really daunting and difficult that I wasn't sure how I was going to be able to do that. So I got like maybe through the Deku scrub portion of the game and nothing really beyond that. So a lot of this was new for me, but man, once you kind of get a handle on everything, and again with the help of like a guide to take you through some of the more obscure missions and tasks, like it's such a blast to go through.
Definitely the 3DS has this whole great library that I think it benefits a lot from there being an eShop, and also that the storage system on the 3DS is like micro SD card, so it's easy to expand the memory of the system itself.
Right.
But I could see this being like a big like collector's piece or retro piece in the future, because there's just like so much unique novel stuff on there. And granted, Majora's Mask doesn't have any 3D features in it, but no one's going to bother to put more... no one's going to make another system with like 3D capabilities like the 3DS ever again. It's just going to be this. That's it.
Right. Yeah, no, it's definitely, an ambitious, I think, portable console. Like I agree. I think anything we kind of do moving forward, I think is not going to innovate itself in that way. So yeah, I'm glad I have one. And I only have a few select games on it. Like I said, I have the two 64 games that they, Zelda 64 games that they remastered. And then I have Super Smash Brothers for the 3DS and Pokemon Ultra Sun. So that's currently what my library consists of. And I've only really delved into Majora's Mask so far. But I think Ocarina of Time is going to be around the corner. And then I'll just briefly mention one other game that I've been playing, and it's from it's from the Super Mario 3D All-Stars, which came out recently. I have decided to kind of work backwards through that. So the only one out of that collection that I've played and that I own on a 64 is Super Mario 64. So I've never played Sunshine and I've never played Galaxy. So I decided to start with Galaxy, and wow, I am really enjoying Galaxy. It's too early to say this, but I think I might be enjoying Galaxy more than I did Odyssey.
That's a pretty high bar. Yeah, I thought Odyssey was pretty good.
Yeah, Odyssey was great. I think I just like the setup for Galaxy. I like that you just kind of go to different worlds and there's like three different kind of mini missions or mini puzzles on each world. Typically some of them only have one or a hidden mission or something on there, but I just like the setup of it, and I like the look of everything. It's just really bright, really colorful. Going through space is super fun. Mario flying around and gravity kind of pulling him to different planets and different things. Looks really cool. His moveset has kind of been streamlined. It's really simple, but they managed to do so much with that move set. You know, he can kind of just jump, ground pound, and spin around. He has like this spin attack move now that I really like. So yeah, I'm really, really enjoying that. I sometimes I pick it up and I plan to play just for like 30 minutes and I end up playing for, you know, double that, just cause I get caught up in the world. So it works really well with the Joy-Cons. That's how I recommend. I played a little bit with my Pro Controller with the, motion controls through that, and it was fine. It did work, but if you're collecting star bits and whatnot, you want to have the Joy-Cons so that you can have that right Joy-Con. You can flick that around to collect all the different star bits in the various stages and stuff.
I feel like so far, there's been one population of people who are like, wow, Mario 64 is old. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one that's like, wow, Mario Sunshine is a little rough too. And then I haven't heard much back sass about Mario Galaxy yet. I think that's maybe just by virtue of being the newest one of the three, it seems to have endeared itself to people the most.
Right. It's also hard to believe that it's a Wii game. When you look at it, man, the graphics, the colors that really pop, like it seems like it could almost pass for like a Nintendo Switch game. It's so close to the level of Odyssey for me in terms of looks. And there's some areas, like when you look at like the toads and stuff, where you can kind of see the graphics are a little bit rougher. But in general, man, it's a gorgeous game.
I'm not a game designer, so I can't say this with authority, but my suspicion is they were able to put a high quality on, you know, Mario and like the world because they're so dang small. You go to the planet and it, you know, it's in terms of like game space, it's a speck like for most of these places. So
right,
you don't have to, you know, spend as much like horsepower rendering like 8 trees in the distance and then a mountain and a beautiful summer, sun that's like cascading light down on all your people and stuff. No, it's in space. Here's Mario. Here's this little orb. He's on the orb. So
right,
if that suspicion is accurate, I think that was a clever idea on their part for like kind of maximizing their assets and their resources.
For sure. Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something there. I think they absolutely were able to compartmentalize a lot of things here to where they really go hard on some of these smaller areas that at face value seem very simple and straightforward in their presentation, but there's so much depth and personality in each of those things that, man, I'm enjoying it very much. So I plan to beat that soon and then probably delve back into Zelda here to tie me over through October. Super Mario Galaxy. Super Galaxy Mario. Yep, but that's it from me in terms of games I've been playing. I know we've been playing Risk of Rain 2 together, but yeah, I won't delve too much into that. Maybe we can discuss that a little bit later, you know, since we've both been playing that. But I'll go ahead and pass it over to you, Bill. What are you playing?
Well, I'm picking up a game again that I tried a few years ago, given another shot, and that's Tokyo Mirage Sessions Cross FE Encore.
Yes. Now this is kind of like a crossover game, right? Like it's pulling from a few different franchises.
It is, in theory, a crossover game. It's okay. So what if you played a Persona game and your whole party was a bunch of entertainers, like idols, singers, actors, stuff like that?
Right.
And then what if the persona were Fire Emblem characters?
Okay. Interesting.
And now I have described to you Tokyo Mirage Sessions Cross FE Encore. It is not like a pure crossover. It's more like they made a Shin Megami Tensei game and then they like added a dash of like Fire Emblem to the mix, really.
Okay. So do you feel like you get more out of the game through being a fan of the Fire Emblem series?
No, not a bit. So the elements that are borrowed from Fire Emblem are, they have the weapon triangle. So like in older Fire Emblem games, there's the sword, the axe, and the spear, and like one is good against one of them while not being good against the other. And that element is incorporated into like the resistances and weaknesses of this game. And then the Persona, as I mentioned, are Fire Emblem characters. But what makes it odd is that they don't look anything like they do in Fire Emblem. Like, they're intentionally kind of made to look ethereal and sort of demonic in appearance, which is cool. But, I mean, then obviously they're not the same person. And then as part of the narrative, they have lost all their memories. So even if you were like a big fan of Fire Emblem Awakening, for example, mm-hmm. in this game, Crom and Tharja, two characters from Awakening, are the Persona here, but they're amnesic. So it's not like Crom and Tharja are going to be like, yo, what up? It's just like, they do have some personality. Like, they will, you know, make some jokes and like add to the conversations, but it's not like you're talking with Crom and Tharja. You're just talking with new characters, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. So is it anything like the Persona games where there's like downtime in between like more like combat focus sections, or is it primarily combat dungeon crawling type?
My hypothesis here is they were testing out some stuff in this game that they either were going to use in Persona 5 and just elected not to, or they like took the ideas from here and put them into Persona 5, because it is sort of a stripped down Persona game where there's chapters and intermissions. In the chapter, you are advancing the main storyline of these evil spirits are invading the world and they're stealing performa from people. And it's like the energy that people use to like express themselves and entertain and do a bunch of, you know, fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you, your main character, Itsuki, and his friends are mirage masters. They have the ability to utilize their performa to call on the power of the Fire Emblem characters to perform a carnage unity and become like a unified fighting force together. And you go into these spaces that are totally not the Shadow Realm or the Midnight Channel or whatever. They're a totally different, unique thing.
Right.
And you have to punch the evil baddie that occupies each of them and save a bunch of people who have had their performa stolen.
Okay. All right. I'm intrigued. I'm kind of digging it. So then in the intermissions, is that where you can like socialize or what have you?
Yeah. Like you kind of can do that in the main stories, but like the intermission is kind of just, it's designed to be there to take care of the side content.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like in Persona where you have days where like, you know, you go to school, you can go to the dungeon, or you can like go to the batting cages.
Right.
It's, there are a couple of shops you can visit, but there's no like 5-point stat boosting thing for like, you know, your charm, your intelligence, your bravery, stuff like that. There are sort of social links where like the other characters in your party, you can do side quests with them, and doing those quests will get you extra experience and unlock new powers for them. But it's not really like the same like kind of journey it is for the social links in Persona, where it's like a big emotional arc. It's more like literally the first one for your best buddy Toma is, hey, I need to go train. Let's go into the dungeon and kill 5 blobs.
Okay, there you go. I mean, you know, that always helps, killing a few blobs.
But even in spite of it being kind of like a watered down like Persona or Shin Megami Tensei game, I'm still enjoying it. I still like wandering around the dungeons. I like the battle system. The battles are cool. Like, they don't do like the all-out attacks that happen in Persona. That what they do is called session attacks. So if you hit a character with their elemental weakness, then if you have another character that has the correct ability, they'll jump in and do a follow-up attack. Mm-hmm. So like your main character, Itsuki, he does electric magic. So if he does electric and hits the weakness, that if another character has this ability, Elec Fire, then if Itsuki does an electric attack and hits the weakness, then they'll do a fire attack on the same enemy. So it's a bit more complicated. It's got like stuff you have to be mindful of in terms of like making sure the abilities pair up with each other. Like you want to make sure that your characters have like good chemistry with their the spells they cast and like what they're looking out for too.
Okay. All right. You're selling me on it. Now I want to play this. Is it something where are you utilizing any sort of like with Persona stuff, like guides help you with getting through things? Do you feel like you need kind of some help here in terms of combat or fighting bosses or anything like that? Or are you not using a guide?
I'm probably going to use a guide at some point because there's a bunch of requests and stuff. And like, I would like some help with the side quests. One thing they've added for the Switch version is there was some DLC for this when it originally came out on the Wii U, and they just threw it in here. And it's an extra dungeon where you can go in and farm a bunch of EXP. Like literally you can like walk in the door and pick up an item that just grants you extra EXP. So you can make the combat trivial if you so choose. Like that is an option.
Okay.
I'm not sure I want to do that though for a few different reasons, but we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Like overall, it's not a great game, but I'm still having fun. And I need to advise you, if you do play it, for the love of God, make sure you save frequently. You can save anywhere you want, anytime you want, but if you die, it just kicks you straight out to the main menu. Like, there's no like, hey, do you want to pick up from the start of this floor of the dungeon? It's like, no, you're just dead. Goodbye.
Oh boy. Yeah, man. Well, okay. Good to know that it's a little bit unforgiving.
And then the other game I've been getting into lately, or continuing to get into, is StarCraft II. So I previously talked about how I was like, I just finished up the Terran campaign, and I was starting the Zerg campaign, and now I finished the Zerg campaign, and I'm almost done with the whole thing. I've technically finished the Protoss campaign, and then after that, when you finish that third campaign, there's like a, they call it an epilogue, where it's like, now you get the true ending to the StarCraft II story, where all three factions team up against the truly evil faction. And, you know, it's more of StarCraft II. I mean, if you've heard of StarCraft or Warcraft, you somewhat know what to expect. You get a bunch of workers, you mine some minerals, you recruit a bunch of soldiers, you march the soldiers across the map and punch the other guy in the noodle. The big things they've added for the Zerg and the Protoss campaigns are, well, first for the Zerg campaign, the big focus there, unlike in a, you know, conventional mission or whatever, you have Kerrigan. Kerrigan is this character who's gone through a bunch of ups and downs, been kind of good guy, bad guy in between. And in this campaign, you get to control her pretty frequently, and she's super powerful. She is basically invulnerable. She can do a bunch of damage with different attacks. She can summon a bunch of monsters. And a lot of the missions really hinge on leveraging her powers specifically as well as possible to kind of carry the day. Because in gameplay terms, the Zerg, I'm not very good with the Zerg. Like, they tend to be a bit fussier in how you use them. They like, there'll be like the right Zerg for the right job, and that's not really how I play. I'm more like, let's make a bunch of one unit and then march it towards the enemy. Mm-hmm. So that strategy tends to not work so well with the Zerg, where there's not really like a one-size-fits-all unit to accomplish that. I found that to be the hardest campaign. Kerrigan was interesting. Like, you can do some cool stuff where, like, alongside, like, unlocking more units and making them better, you're leveling up Kerrigan. And as you level her up, you get to access more powers, and you can, like, kind of re-spec her at any time to, like, get access to different powers. And by the end, she can like summon this massive Leviathan that is this incredibly powerful air unit that will like march across the battlefield and destroy anything in its sight. And it's got its own set of powers, just like Kerrigan.
Oh, cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just challenging and not fully how I like to play the game, because all there are definitely more missions in this campaign that are like, rather than the typical base building archetype where it's like you start in the corner, you build your base, you march your army. It's like, here are two units and you have to take care of these two units for the entire mission and get them where they need to be and like really, really use their powers well to be able to survive. And I have a lot of trouble with those missions. So that was a little less fun doing all those. So there's that campaign. And then we get into the Protoss campaign afterward. And that one I found a little more to my liking. Instead of Kerrigan this time, in the storyline, you're on this big ship called the Spear of Adun. And as the ship can kind of supplement your ground army and like use extra abilities for to benefit it. So like one is... if you store up enough power, you can automatically warp in a bunch of troops. Like you can just press a button and it'll give you a bunch of troops that are teleported in from your ship. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And then okay. There's also like orbital bombardment and other stuff like that.
Nice. Okay. So out of all the campaigns you've played throughout StarCraft II, what's been your favorite? I guess maybe I should wait until you're fully finished with the game, but what's been your absolute favorite, you think?
I think I liked the Terran one the most. The Zerg campaign, I didn't like the gameplay as much, and I found the story kind of ridiculous. And the Protoss campaign, I'm liking the gameplay, but the story is even more ridiculous. Like, you will discover that, like, no one in this universe can stay dead. Like, everyone is just going to like hang around somehow, or like even characters that like very obviously died will just like show up and be like, hey, I'm here again. From games that came out 2 decades ago. Like, honestly, I don't need to see this character that was in the first StarCraft game that came out in 1997. You can just make a new character. It's fine. I'm not right. Nostalgic particularly. And like there was a certain point in sci-fi stories where they all got really like overwrought and all about like how actually there's this progenitor race that kind of looks like Cthulhu and they're the ones who are responsible for shaping the galaxy. You, the player, are like the part of the progenitor race, or like you're the chosen one and you have to be the person, the only person who can set things right again. Like Mass Effect did this, Halo did this. And it happens in StarCraft too, so I'm kind of exhausted of sure. that particular kind story type.
It. Yeah, right.
Man, I think Halo out of all those was the worst to do that, because like Master Chief is, you know, supposed to be like literally this run of the mill generic soldier, and now he's the chosen one meant to save all of civilization.
Right, he's like a god tier character.
In spite of the kind of wonky storyline, I'm still just enjoying the core gameplay of StarCraft, of building stuff, and I'm playing through on hard, which was, I think, the appropriate difficulty for me. Like, it was, it's proven that I've had to restart several times. I've beaten a lot of missions, like, just very barely. Like, my base is in ruins. I'm down to, like, my last few units, and I'm just getting across the finish line, stuff like that, so.
But it's more satisfying that way, I imagine, right?
Yeah. It feels like you had exactly enough skill and resources and ability to do exactly up to the objective. So that's cool. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think pretty soon I'll be done. And after that, there's some extra DLC that is kind of storyline-wise not relevant. And then it's just like more missions, basically. So I'll probably tackle that in the future. And it actually made me want to go back also and play the Fire Emblem DLC. I don't know if you ever got around to that, but they released this like extra single player campaign that's kind of a side story to the main Fire Emblem Three Houses adventure, where it borrows characters from all the houses and you go on this other quest. Have you tried that at all?
I have not tried it. I know it was a thing they released, but I didn't have as much desire to kind of go back into three houses once I had finished the main story.
That's totally fair. I took the time to play the first couple of missions, and then I fell off it. So I think I'm just going to like restart from scratch, maybe even like stream just that part, that DLC campaign, because it's only like 8 to 10 hours. Probably knock it out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, with things like that, when you've kind of just barely started, sometimes it's just easier to just go from the beginning again.
But that's basically what I've been playing. There's some other stuff I want to get into. And then it being October, I'm excited to get into some spooky games this coming month. Brandon, you know, you sold me on Until Dawn. I think I'm going to play Until Dawn this month.
Yeah, man. Oh, I think you'll have a lot of fun with that. I certainly did playing through it. And it's, yeah, let me know if, you know, you're wanting anyone to join you stream-wise. I think there's like audience participation or something that people can do with that. I forget how it works, but I think there's like a way for people to contribute to, you know, watching or something like that. Or maybe that's for some of their later games in the series. But yeah, oh, you're going to have a good time.
Right on, yeah. And we were talking a little about this before, but yeah, there's a new Dark Pictures game, Little Hope, coming out soon. So we'll have to check that out as well.
Absolutely.
And I guess lastly, the final game we should talk about, you know, I had Die On a couple weeks ago and we talked about this, but we should definitely check in some more and talk about Risk of Rain 2. Brandon, how do you like Risk of Rain 2?
Man, I'm really digging it. I was kind of on board just from the concept in general, but once we got into it, and especially now that we've unlocked a few more characters and we've discovered a few more secrets that the game has beyond its more straightforward, like kill enemies, get weapons, kill the boss, use the teleporter type thing. I'm loving just the exploration and the discovery aspect of the game a lot. I like when we find little secrets or we come across something that we weren't necessarily prepared for. It makes it that much more fun. And I just love the presentation of the whole thing. So I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I've been having a blast. I think I'm repeating myself a little bit here, but I feel like this distills the experience of like Borderlands or Destiny into like this very compact package. And I really appreciate that. And I've totally appreciated, yeah, like the discovery of secrets and just like finding out kind of random things about the world as we go.
Right. Yeah. And I like how, unlike some of these other games you mentioned, I think the variety of the enemies is really interesting. Whenever we come across a new enemy, I'm like, man, not only is its design just really cool, but it attacks in a different way that from a lot of other things we've come across. Like, I just like the sheer amount of a variety that it has from world to world. And I think a lot of games try to replicate that, try to find that sweet spot of like, you know, straightforward gameplay that's easy to kind of pick up and play, mixed with like constant change and surprises and stuff. And I think Risk of Rain just really strikes that perfect balance.
I'm glad. Yeah. Always on the lookout for more good multiplayer stuff. Looks like there's some coming down the chute, but I think we'll be playing Risk of Rain 2 for a while to come.
Yeah, I'm always going to be down to get into it more, just to unlock, you know, some more characters and find some more things we need to do that are unique to certain worlds and stuff. I'm definitely down to keep exploring it with you.
Cool. We'll have to do that in the future. But until then, Brandon, was there anything else you wanted to cover before we call it a day?
I think that's it for me. There's a lot of, I'm now maybe going to go out buy Tokyo Mirage Sessions after we're done recording here. Because you might have convinced me to pick it up. And it, you know, I'm always down for some good JRPG goodness.
It's very campy. It's very silly. So I hope you enjoy that. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, then I think we'll call this episode of So Many Bits to a close. Before we go, Brandon, is there any place you want people to find you online?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at BEEShock. And please join me on Bill's streams on Thursday nights.
Great. And if you want to reach us, we can be contacted by email at somanybitspodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, we're So Many Bits on there. Follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at So Many Bits. Subscribe to us on iTunes, please rate and review or download from Simplecast or stream via Spotify. We play games twitch.tv/SoManyBits Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time. Wednesdays usually for single-player experiences and Thursdays for multiplayer. And last but not least, thank you very much for listening. Have a great summer.